Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Attack of Opportunity. Now, you know, this is my third try at mimicking Matt Witt, and I'll just have to get him back in the studio for these because nobody does the intro like my man Matt. But hello, welcome to another episode of Attack of Opportunity, a special treat for y'all today. First of all, let me say that this is one of the first videos that we are going to stream, not necessarily live, but it will be up there, and it won't necessarily be on our channel. So let me introduce myself. I am GM Jeff Ball, and I am part of the Rollmongers Actual Play Podcast Network, where we try to supply you with Pathfinder RPGs, such as Rise of the Runelords under Clinton's Core Classic, War for the Crown Pathfinder, recently come out, called Dice Before Dishonor, up-and-coming shows that run Pathfinder Society adventures, and maybe even Mummy's Mask from the man from Osirian. We have our staple podcast from Ye Olde Days, our first attempt, Star Wars Saga Edition, running the Dawn of Defiance campaign. We shot first, but you're not listening to an Actual Play podcast. Right here, we have our behind-the-scenes look at us and at content creators who we admire, who we follow, and have helped us, contributed back forth, you know, hands across the water, that kind of thing, in Attack of Opportunity. It is my distinct pleasure, because I am a personal fan of the man that you are about to meet. Please welcome to the show, Chris Honkala, a.k.a. Treant Monk. Now, where have we heard that name before? Why, this is the guy that I personally know has put stuff up on the net, okay? In a lovely color-coded, you know, one color is really good to choose, other colors he's not so fond of character builds. And when I first found Pathfinder, I happened to stumble across his work, post on that, and this guy put a lot of work and a lot of love into these. Now, this is his personal experience. I don't think the man's like a bona fide expert, but just to have somebody break down feats for a class and actually give an explanation of why you would want to have this spell for druid or that spell for druid or this feat coming out of the gate at low level versus this feat later on was, well, it sped my journey along. And I'm really glad to meet you. Chris, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Jeff.
So, to start off, you know it, you love it. The very first question, we like to delve deep. Was there a personal point in your life when you discovered that you were a geek, a nerd, one of us? One of us. And by one of us, see this blue Snuggie I'm rocking here? This is close to a monk outfit as I could get going. Coupled with the shameless plug of a t-shirt, you know. Hinting at the man from Osirian and perhaps even Matt Witt's Starfinder campaign, but I digress. Chris, tell us about what started your journey into the world of RPG.
Okay, well, as for being a nerd, I think I was born one. I mean, I have no memories of not being into swords and sorcery and science fiction and all that. I mean, I went to kindergarten and I was picking up sticks and pretending they were swords. I was introduced to D&D by my brother. That would have been in 1980. I was like 8 or 7, something like that. He had played it with some friends at junior high and brought it home, and we both fell in love with it. I didn't know I was a nerd because I always thought nerds were good at school and wore glasses, and so I didn't fit what I thought the definition of a nerd was until much later. I have an epiphany moment, actually, that... where I knew that I was a nerd. And that's
the one we're digging for.
Okay. I was an adult, and I had moved out of my house, and I had moved in with my best friend as roommates, and we were watching The Simpsons. And in 1993, and there was an episode, and at the very beginning of the episode, they have the different openings, and the Monty Python foot came down and squished them. And we both laughed, like, because we both love Monty Python. I mean, he had written the script, like typed it out for Monty Python and the Holy Grail for fun. Like, that's where we were. And it was, the episode was Homer Goes to College, where he meets the nerds. And they loved Monty Python and they quoted it. They played D&D. They debated which Star Trek captain was the best. And then it kind of hit me. I'm like, oh, I'm not just a nerd. I'm a stereotypical one.
We've all done that. We've all been there. Game master.
So that was the moment where it clicked, where I realized I wasn't just unpopular. I was a nerd.
How many games have devolved into just suddenly a random part of the Holy Grail being quoted and then the rest of the movie playing out by everyone at the table in that moment? I've been there. You've been there. You know what I'm talking about.
I do. That's
absolutely great. I personally also do love Python, but this isn't about me. I'm trying so hard. I've gotten some fan mail recently going, you know, stop interviewing yourself, Jeff. You're interviewing the guests. Let them talk. So next question. So you were talking about the years and the dates. How long have you been, you know, quote unquote, a gamer? Now, usually the generic term on that for gamer is video game. But like how long have you actually been playing RPGs?
I started playing RPGs before there were video games that people had. Like I went to an arcade and played, you know, Space Invaders. But D&D I started playing the 1979. I just got, I found, this is my initial player's handbook.
Oh, he's showing it.
Yeah, there it is.
Not just a podcast yet, ladies and gentlemen. We're trying to get into the sort of video aspect, and he's waving around the player's handbook.
Yeah. 1982 was that one. And that
printing.
And I started with Basic, which was the red book in the box. But this was my first advanced team.
And is that the one with the big statue of the red guy and they're prying the eyeball gem out?
That's the one.
That's the one.
And it is well used and well made because that thing, you know, you can lift it by the pages. And if they made books like that now, you would never need to replace a book.
Yeah. Well, it was about the, you know, back when they printed for love and not money and making everything tissue paper. Yeah. Like, I recently bought a series of adventures and I've opened the module too much, like too wide, I guess, and some of it's let go and the pages are sliding around.
Oh, when they glue in the pages, it's the worst. Yeah, no, in the old days they used to individually stitch each page, and those books are, it's great because if you're a collector, then those books will last, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who's avid collector of D&D stuff. He has you know, the white box, the original D&D. He has like six of those and they're all different printings. And there's one he has that we're not allowed to touch because it's like worth $10,000 or something crazy.
Still in the plastic, like that other Simpsons episode where Buddy's got everybody on the wall. He's the collector.
Everything he can still have in plastic, he does, yes.
Now, we will definitely, I've also on the video here, I've got up the Goblin Cave, a D&D 5th edition stream that you're in. But before we get into that, I had touched earlier on, I would like to know what made you decide to sort of go public with your sort of build thoughts, you know, this awesome color-coded setup where you're just putting it out there going, hey guys, you know, I've played this game and this is what I think you should do, or, you know, I hope this kind of helps you. I found it immensely helpful and ballsy on your part that you just put that out there without people going, you know,
And so it started actually with 3.5 D&D, right? Because I was on, there was, the Wizards of the Coast had their own forum at the time, and there was an optimization forum, and it was kind of a community. And one of the posters there, who was kind of my inspiration, his handle was Logic Ninja, and he did a guide for wizards called Logic Ninja's Guide to Wizards Being Batman. And I read it, and the style was kind of humorous and sarcastic and everything, and I loved it. But I hated his content because I disagreed with everything. right? And so I started to post, you know, criticisms, and then he would say, well, why don't you just write your own guide? And I'm like, okay. So I did. I wrote Monk's Guide to Wizards Being a God, and people liked it, and it did really well. And so I started writing other guides, and then Pathfinder came. Right, and 3.5 had gotten so bogged down in too many books and too many rules.
Yes, the monster rule set, they called it.
Yeah, and so I was looking for a way out, right? And then Pathfinder started their playtest, and so I went to the Paizo website, right, to their forum, and there was a very negative vibe towards optimization there. Just hate posts about, you know, these players who all they want to do is hog all the attention and all this stuff. And so I started to post there. And I thought, what these people need is some content. So that's where I started, is I thought, I'm going to write as much as I can about Pathfinder. I'm going to get in and do class after class, so people can see that this isn't about wrecking your game, right? That's not the idea here. The idea is just So people, it's a guide to help people make these kind of characters.
Yeah, right? Your work has a very logical, soft sell tone to it that I personally enjoyed. It wasn't what they call like the min-maxers going, oh, this is what you got to do. And then somebody else disagrees or whatever. You just laid it out going, you know, this is what you should take and why. And I like the why. And I remember the first time I read your stuff, I was working on a character and I looked up a character or whatever, and you were actually disagreeing with some of my favorite low level spells. And I was like, oh, but I like those spells. But funny enough, you know, because you had laid it out in sort of a top to bottom form, I couldn't argue your point. It was a personal preference going, you know, and that's what hooked me on your work was like, I can disagree with this guy without getting mad at him because I can see his point. I can see how he built it because you laid it out so nicely. And there it was. And still my choice, whether to read more of your work, it's still our choice. Yeah.
I don't want to tell anybody. I just need to stop right now and just make it clear. I don't want to tell anybody what spells they should like or don't like, or what character options they should like or don't like. If you like something, do it. It's fun. That's what it's about. These are just opinions. I'm not trying to tell anyone.
Yeah, sorry. It was like effective.
I have to repeat that sometimes because people think I'm trying to impose.
No.
Something on them, and I just want to make it clear. I love to share my opinion. I'm an opinionated guy. But if you're having fun using something I don't like, have your own fun, right?
Exactly. Sorry, and I didn't mean to.
No. I just wanted to make
paint that picture as a
I
fan.
I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
How can we find these layouts? Because like I said, I found you when you hit the Pathfinder stuff. Do you have a message board that you haunt? Do you have somewhere beside the old wizards? You know, do you have your own website? Where can we find these layouts? Where can people look at these and make their own decisions?
For the stuff I've written, if you Google Treant Monk, it's going to come up, right? But the Pathfinder stuff, and I don't even know where to find it anymore other than Googling it. I mean, they're all on Google Docs, and they're all publicly accessible. I have a WordPress account where I post new stuff that I've done, but the old stuff, it's out there, right? The Wizards of the Coast site doesn't exist anymore, but a lot of people asked if they could repost my stuff, and I've always said yes. So
until I've seen this actual PNG that I've got posted here of a actual Treant done up like a monk, he's got his little purple loincloth, he's doing this sideways sort of kick, and he's got his little wooden staff. So a wooden creature holding a wooden staff, I personally find hilarious, but what I really like is how he's got leaves for fingers and has leaves for sort of the Fu Manchu eyebrows and everything going on here. It's a great picture. Is there an actual character in existence out there where you played a Treant as a monk? Because I understand the moniker Treant Monk, people put two things together. We have our own Connor Besh, and he's on a show called TheRetonEntertainment.com, and they talk about video games with another one of our players, and he's known on the net as Cyberpunk Monk. He has a love for Shadowrun, and you know, so it puts it together. It makes sense, right? So why the name? Why this name? There's no character to back it?
Yeah, no, there's a reason for it, but it's not very... I don't like playing monks. Monks are probably my least favorite class.
Okay,
but you see, I came up through, you know, basic first edition, second edition, and when third edition came out, this is the point where I started to post on the Wizards of the Coast website. It was the first point where the Monster Manual came out, and you could put you could give class levels to monsters, and I thought that was cool, but I thought it led to some really silly things, right? And a friend, Travis, and I were talking, and we talked about, you know, some campaign, what we'd have to have is Treants who are like, they're also monks and they come in with flying drop kicks and stuff. So when I put my handle on Wizards of the Coast, I just did Treant Monk just from that joke, right? Because it's absurd, right?
Yeah, no, I get you. So I was just curious if there was an original kick, because you have the artwork, right? Original character to go with it.
No, I the artwork came much, much later. It's actually just from like within the past year.
So how did you end up streaming? Where did you go from that sort of personal gaming to deciding to post personal opinion content to help people with builds online to making the sort of podcast, vodcast, or live, you know, stream to game in a group? Where did that come from?
About earlier this year, actually. So I stopped posting much actual content because I was dealing with some health issues, and then I came back and started to write some stuff, and it wasn't getting the views that I used to get, and I wasn't getting as many comments. What I really like is feedback, right? Because that's kind of the whole point, is people disagree and then you sometimes agree with them, right? And then you change your mind, and I love that. But I wasn't getting as much of that. And then I thought, I need to really get out there. I'm going to get out there and just see what happens. And, you know, because this is my passion, right? I love this. It's family, this, everything else, right? So I figured I was going to try to increase my exposure, right? And so that's where the YouTube idea came from. And that's why I do streaming now and all that stuff.
So the stream is called The Goblin Cave. Goblin Cave RPG.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When and where can, well, obviously it's on Twitch, but what nights do you guys stream?
Okay, so we've had lots of scheduling issues lately, but yeah, the campaign is Blades of Waterdeep, and it's based off of Waterdeep Dragon Heist. It just started, and it normally will be streaming on Mondays at around 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. For about 3 or 4 hours. I have a really interesting character with it. I had this character concept that I thought was cool. It's a halfling who's a cleric, and he's a trickery cleric who worships Tamora, who's the goddess of luck. And all his spells, they appear like somebody just got lucky. So if he casts a cure spell, he just says, you know, Chi, are you okay? And then they realize that, oh, I put that drinking flask where I was hit with the weapon, and I'm not hurt as bad as I thought I was, kind of thing.
Right. No, that's very clever. The subtle, yeah. You know, I love those shows where it looks like, was it? It's a great scene in the Pirates Caribbean, and you see Johnny Depp running around setting up all this stuff, and then the fight ensues, and then he goes around collecting or using that setup in the fight, and it just looks like luck. Or you have that, the flask, the Bible, the whatever, stopped the bullet, and the guy pulls it last minute, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
No, that's a great trope. That never gets old. Yeah. So are you involved in any other public projects besides your own work, besides the Goblin Cave?
Not at the moment. No, I just do, a YouTube channel. I do the one stream. We'll see what comes up there. I'm basically looking for projects right now. So there will be other stuff in the future, I'm sure.
Looking for projects, you say?
I'm doing a podcast today.
Yeah, that's right. And like, I'm not your only fan. Aiden Willems, who plays Poser, our disgruntled emo Jedi, and plays Raskin in Clinton's Car Classics, is also, like, as soon as I said your name, went nuts. You know, we have fans in the group. They'd love to work with us. Maybe doing some voiceover. But anyway, we'll have to talk about that off camera. Chris, what do you do for a living? I always find it interesting to find out, you know, where the sort of, it's not always that sort of stereotypical, even though you said you were one, that goes with the mindset. What do you do for a living?
I manage a 7-Eleven store. That's what I do. I've worked at 7-Eleven since 1993.
So you actually have a people... After my big setup going, well, that kind of fits the trope. But think about it, guys. Here's a guy in customer service that deals with every walk of life that's in a hurry, whether it's cigarettes or whatever, right? And you have to engage people because that is your job, whether it's a quiet conversation or 2 minutes of make their day better or just so that you don't get bored out of your skull, because I've worked convenience back in the day. Do you find that you get any inspiration for characters or voices or anything as these people like shuffle through the line?
You are good. how you connect those. I've never even thought about that. No. You know?
That's why I'm the boss. So you know, that's why I'm the idea guy behind the network.
Here's the reality. I go to work every day. I plug away. I come home. I collect my check. And then I worry about D&D. You know, it's just... I don't dislike my job. It's fine. I like the people I work with. That's important. So I don't dread going to work or anything, but I really don't even think about my life outside of work when I'm there, and I don't think about work when I'm outside of work.
Really? So there's no, like, yeah. What about the downtime where they just have you doing stock? There's no daydreaming about, or
no one has me doing anything. I'm the boss.
Really?
Yeah. So I go in, I have my list of things I want to accomplish, and then everything goes wrong and I troubleshoot. When my day is over, I go to my car and I get in, and then I start thinking D&D or family or anything other than work. I totally separate it. Work and play are two totally different things for me. I don't get it, it's a way to provide for me and my family, and it's fine, but I don't love it. If I could find a way to connect it to D&D, that'd be cool. I haven't found really a way to do that. I'm so focused on it when I'm there, I don't even think D&D. And then, yeah.
Well, if you tried to sell your content like out of the gate, people would find you pretentious. You know, you got to get that sort of free up there, use it if you want. Admiration fans come around and find a way to monetize. Streaming is a good first step, you know, but you are in it, especially fifth edition. There is a sea of streams and podcasts, especially on a Friday night, that you are competing with. But, you know, doing it for love before money. I mean, anyone would want to do and get paid to do it and have fun, you know, that old, you know, love what you do kind of thing.
If I can find a way to make a couple bucks doing this, I'll do it. I mean, sure, right? At some point I might earn a little bit of ad revenue from YouTube. That's great. I'll take it. Happy to get any extra income. If doing something you love, I mean, that's just perfect, right? But if I never earn a dime, that's fine. I love this.
Well, what have you ever considered, now that you have work, like your own personal stuff, like even the builds and everything, have you ever considered something like Patreon or starting your own page or whatever? Because like there are people that put up far worse than your content, sir, and making far more, you know, like there's, don't get me wrong, respect for what you do and you're doing it for free. Like I said, our entire network at the moment is out of pocket. And we want to build something and show people a lot of content and then say, you know, when we run out of cash, which is soon, you know, this is what we're doing to prove we can do it because we'd love to do it. Now, if you want to help and you want to make it better and you want the shows to come faster and that kind of thing, yes, of course, we could use your help. And, you know, one of us will go from full time to part time, namely yours truly, who does all the editing and producing and, you know, that kind of thing.
The thing about writing guides, okay, because that's what I did, right? I just wrote guides or articles or character builds. That's all I did. And the thing about that is you have no idea how many people, like, I don't know how many people have read this or that, right? Like, if I go on to my Google Docs, I can see how many people are there right at moment, but I don't know how many people have visited it. So there's no way for me to really gauge how much potential is there. That's part of the reason I wanted to start doing different things, is things I can measure. I can measure how many people are subscribed to my YouTube channel. And I have a thought in mind as to if it ever gets to this number, I'll think about a Patreon page, right? You know, so I'm open to that kind of thing. And if it never gets to that number, then it never does. That's fine. I still like doing it. But I have in my head, I mean, if I could get to the point where I could do this for a living, I would do it instantly, right? I'd quit my job tomorrow.
I can't offer you a paying gig, but dude, you are always welcome in our circles. Like you said, the guys have so much respect for your work or whatever. You know, I mean,
right now I'm just trying to get out
there. Call in. I don't know if you have an email or whatever, you know, send Chris an email saying you love his work, and not that you'd send him money, but you know, like give the guy some encouragement. Whenever we get the slightest little hint of, oh, hey, I've checked out your show. It's miles worth of inspiration for us to keep going, to play when we're tired, for me to burn all my lunch hours and half my days off and alienating my wife and family, trying to get all this stuff up and out there. I don't think people realize that contact, that even if it's negative and tries to steer or, you know, constructive, trying to steer you in a positive direction, someone saying, hey, you know, you're a bit heavy on this, you're a bit light on that, that's just my opinion, you know, type of thing. It helps shape you, and it's everything will still move you forward. The worst thing you can be is isolated. So you say you've got a YouTube channel. Is it Treant Monk on YouTube?
Yeah, I call it Treant Monk's Temple. When you're talking about feedback, I mean, for sure, anytime somebody tells you that they like your content, whatever it is, oh God, that's huge. But I don't mind the bad stuff as long as they're constructive, right? But some stuff is just hate, right? that stuff sucks. But if somebody says, you know, I liked it, I think you've made a mistake here because this spell you talked about doing this, did you think about this and this and this? And I love those kind of comments, right? As long as it's not just, poison, right?
Yeah, toxic internet, what they call. As a joke, I needed an extra email. And on a whim, talking back and forth with one of our guys, Matt Witt, I came up with GM Jeff the Diva DM. And they just killed themselves laughing, going, that's you, dude, you're such a diva. It's like, well, you don't understand like how inspired I am to make this content after playing for so long, and how the slightest nod in my direction or shaking of head really affects one's outlook of like, I'm gonna keep doing this, get bummed or whatever. I'm not saying someone like myself is so fragile, but I don't think fans realize the power they have over a content creator with what they say. They just...
Well, we wouldn't do anything publicly if we didn't want a response, right? There's no point in it at all, right? Unless you want people to respond. And of course we want positive reinforcement. I mean, we're human beings.
Yes. No, this is, you've been one of my best interviews. My only fear is I'm watching my microphone light up while you're talking and I'm trying to mute it halfway from the 14 points. So I hope that hasn't kiboshed the first half of your interview. Chris, thank you so much for being on the show. Everyone out there, the man needs some attention. He needs some love. Check out his content. Go just type in Triumph Monk and see what we're talking about. Agree, disagree. If it's toxic, keep to yourself. Go to his YouTube channel, show him some love. The man goes to a 9-to-5, just like the rest of you. Puts bread, food on the table, and does this for love. So please, respect the monk. You know what I'm saying? Chris, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Jeff. This was a lot of fun.